We are still dancing on scrambled eggs. Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to the unofficial Marquette Basketball Podcast. Joe McCann here with Phil Bush. Phil, the team is still dancing, and wow, how's your heart doing? Because mine is really racing still.
I have my cardiologist on speed dial, and I have my wife on death watch. I think there was a moment last night where I couldn't feel anything below my belly button, and I thought my dog might have been dead. But other than that, it was great.
Survive and advance, as they say, and that is exactly what Marquette has done through two tournament games, two absolute thrills. We're going to break them down today on Scrambled Eggs and just gush about this team, really making it to its third Sweet 16. This is the first time since the tournament field expanded to 64 teams that Marquette has made it to three consecutive Sweet 16s, and what a run it's been for this team. And this team has raised the bar again, Phil. Buzz Williams said before the season that Sweet 16 isn't good enough again, saying that, you know, in his mind, Sweet 16 was like the minimum expectation now for Marquette, and they've managed a way to get back here again.
Well, and the fact that they were basically written off a handful of times in the last 72 hours and are still here and advancing, it's maybe not what you want, but boy, they sure do find ways to keep you engaged, especially after some of the snoozers that that took place earlier in the morning yesterday.
That game against Butler has to be the game of the tournament, certainly one of them, you know, one of the top two or three games of the tournament so far. That game, Marquette definitely struggled in the first half as Butler kind of pulled away a little bit, got that lead up to 10, and you're kind of wondering if that might be the end of the road. But I just thought the second half effort by Marquette, especially on the defensive end, was just absolutely phenomenal. I think the two things, obviously, that stand out were the defense in the second half and, of course, Vanderblue.
Well, absolutely. And I will say this, and we'll kind of analyze both games, but I will say, in my personal opinion, I thought Davidson was actually one of Buzz's worst coach games. Now, I say that as an internet dork. But I thought Davidson was one of his worst coach games, whereas Butler, especially the second half, like you talked about, was a phenomenally coached game, especially in the out-of-bounds plays that Marquette's struggled to defend from time to time, and just in terms of speeding them up, taking away Clark, and really getting the offense rolling. Because I think, you know, if you look at some of the stats in the Butler game, I think the defense was good. I agree with you, but I think the fact that the change in the offense was just startling if you look at the first half versus the second half.
Yeah, you know, in the first half, you're kind of getting the feeling that, you know, Rodney Clark was just going to get his, that he was just going to go off and he was just going to hit a bunch of open shots no matter what Marquette did to him. But, you know, I was kind of, in the second half, I was definitely kind of watching Clark more than I was watching the ball. When Butler was on offense and seeing who was on him and if they were right in his pocket. And really they were. And I think the substitutions, I don't know how many substitutions Marquette had at the end of the day, but I think at some point midway through the second half, it was like 66, and they must have finished with something like 80 substitutions or more. And it was just maybe just a product of just shuffling, make sure there were fresh legs on Rodney Clark at all times. And that's what Marquette really had to do, whether it was Cadugan on him, whether it was Blue or Derek Wilson or, you know, Jamil Wilson or whoever was on him. I think for the most part in the second half, they did just a tremendous job of just not letting him get any space, not letting him go right, because if you saw the shot chart there at the start of the second half, he made everything going right and missed everything going left for the most part. And so I think that was a tremendous adjustment by Buzz and the staff of saying, look, we're not going to let this guy beat us. If someone's going to beat us, it's going to have to be somebody else for Butler.
Well, and I agree, and Butler made changes too. I mean, all credit due to Brad Stevens. I think he had a well-coached game as well, because they made adjustments when we were pressuring out on the ball. Then they started running pick and rolls and screener options, and Smith and Jones were getting open on pick and rolls, especially down low. So they made the adjustments, But
yeah, Brad Stevens coached a phenomenal game too. I mean, just for a while there, it just seemed like there was just like a ceiling where Marquette wasn't going to crack that 2-point ceiling.
And, because
it seemed like every time Marquette got close, Butler had an answer, hit a big shot, made one, you know, great extra pass to get it to Smith down low, who would, you know, get a layup or whatever. But, you know, Butler had a lot of fight yesterday, and it's just a matter of Marquette grinding all the way to the end to finally pull through.
Well, yeah, and if you think about it, it took a couple of, just as Bill Rafferty would say, onions shot, you know, Vander's corner shot for three to tie it at 69. First of all, that shot last year, the year before, from Vander isn't anywhere close. Second of all, to take the take that shot at that point in the possession with that time on the clock, I think that just encapsulates everything that has symbolized Vander's tremendous improvement this year. Just the fact that he even took the shot, had the confidence, and then made it.
Of course, Rupp Arena is the home of Big Blue Nation, Kentucky Wildcats fans, but for us it was Big Vander Blue Nation this past weekend, because he truly emerged as the closer. He's emerged as a scorer this year, but I think what we saw in Rupp Arena was just a different level for Vander. And it really maybe even goes back to the St. John's game, too, of Vander being able to close. Remember on paint touches, I think, halfway through conference play, they wrote a blog basically challenging Vander to be a closer and not disappear late in games, which he had done, even though he had a few, you know, high-scoring games early in conference play. He really wasn't there late in games. And I think this past week was him really answering the bell, because he was there for Marquette in the Davidson game, and he was just absolutely huge in the Butler game. He had some big steals that turned the game around, and of course he hit that big three. And you know, even Jay Billis was saying afterwards, Blue had to be one of the players of the tournament for the first weekend.
Right. Well, and he scored 17 points in the second half. But I mean, going back to the stats, Crack Sidewalks put out an interesting look at the statistics. If you look at the points per possession or the efficiency in the first half versus the second half against Butler, one of the key things, Marquette went from a 0.83 to a 1.34, and Butler went from a 1.05 to a 1.06. So just from a stat head standpoint, the defense stayed consistent, if nothing else, but the offense got redonkulous in the second half. And I think that's where it closed in. I agree with you from the eye test. The defense was great, especially Junior, I think, stepped up the most, because there was a couple of times in the first half where he just got absolutely owned on the defensive end. And in the second half, I think he was very good at holding Clark, not down, but at least limiting the damage. The question is, do you think Clark was injured? And that contributed to his offensive woes in the last 15 minutes.
You know, maybe he was. He was definitely holding his wrist when he was out of the game, and, you know, just kind of flexing it a little bit. You know, after the game, you know, he brushed off the question, said, "No, I'm fine. But I don't know about you, but when he let that last three-pointer go that would have given them the lead, I absolutely flatlined, because I thought that was going in.
I didn't.
He got a good look at it, and the guy never freaking misses. And I just thought, well, that's going to be it.
Yeah, absolutely. I was on the ground. My wife had to ask me after about a minute or two if I was still alive, because I was just sitting there with my eyes closed going, oh, God, how did we avoid that one? If you can play the Pope card twice in one week, I think we have. I don't think we can count on that again, because that was a heck of a break that he missed that shot, because it wasn't a great look and he was going to his left, so that helped us, but it was still more of a, I would actually argue, it was more of a look than he got during the Maui game when he launched that national commercial nightmare for us.
Well, yeah, well, the Maui game, he didn't even have a look. He just threw it up, and it went in. I mean, that was a freaking miracle in that game.
Right, I mean, right. So, I mean, he had a better look this time and just didn't get enough of it on it. So, I hate to call out the officials again, but, you know, if we had gone on to lose that game, there's a couple of calls there that just are just getting all sorts of attention again. The Devontae Gardner pass down the court, he got rid of the ball a full second before he got fouled. And then Jamil Wilson, first of all, in all deference to the bad officiating on Jamil Wilson getting shoved out of bounds and Butler even getting a shot at it with 2.7 left, that pass never should have been made.
No.
Worst case scenario, Vander should have thrown it into the front court and let one of our players try and chase it down. And if Butler got it, Butler got it. With 2.7, they would have been going the wrong way, and the odds are astronomical. So to make that pass there, I think was a huge mistake.
Yeah, it was a panic. And thankfully, you know, I don't want to be a sore winner and talk about calls that, you know, could have screwed Marquette over. But there are definitely are some calls that were frustrating in that game for Marquette, and I think you hit on both of them there. I definitely thought Jamil was getting pushed as that ball went out of bounds, but that, yeah, forget it, because it was a bad pass. It shouldn't have been made anyway.
Right, and that's, yeah, so you can't put yourself in a position where a call's going to determine the outcome, I think is ultimately what I'm rambling to.
And I think the other thing that's at least worth mentioning, I think we can all agree, all college basketball fans, that this elbow rule has got to be looked at and changed and probably just done away with in the offseason, because Trent Lockett's flagrant one could have been a critical play in the game. I mean, it was critical because
didn't Butler go on something like a 9-2 run after that flagrant one was called?
I'll have to look at the stats and see what exactly the run was, but it was a critical play in the game because, Butler got a couple free points out of it, and it was totally, there was no intent or anything. And, you know, what I hate about that is, you know, when a guy's got his face right up in your chest, I mean, what are you supposed to do, really? I mean, if Lockett does what the rule basically mandates him to do, he either has to back up or he has to bring the ball down below his waist to get it going left, and that, you know, it's a little bit tougher, a little bit easier to steal the ball from him when he brings it down like that. What he's trying to do is what he's supposed to do, is protect the ball, keep, you know, an arm between the defender and the ball as he brings it across his body and tries to go left.
Well, it's no different than if you and I are both baseball fans, it's no different than when Barry Bonds used to have the big armor plate on his elbow leaning out over the plate, taking away half the plate from the pitcher. I mean, if we're going to enforce the rule that way, because there was even a point late in the second half where I don't remember who Gardner was guarding, but he made the same exact, it may have been Smith, where he went over the top of his head and I was thinking, Gardner, step into that. Just, you know, like Roger Dorn in Major League 2, you know, take the pitch on the inside and get to first there, because if he had stepped into that, that would have changed the whole complexion of the game. Marquette wins going away because they get two free throws and the ball. I mean, there has to be some sort of mitigation of that rule. It seems it almost cost Creighton a game. The time and location of the foul against Lockett was maybe not a death knell, obviously, since we went on to win, but it certainly changed the complexion of the game.
Yeah. That hopefully the NCAA has to look at it in the off season, and hopefully there will be some changes for next year. But we're over it,
right?
Because it didn't cost Marquette the game. Overall, just a really just an excellently, very well played game. I know a lot of people want to say Marquette got lucky in the first game, and maybe they're lucky to be in the Sweet 16. And I don't think there was any luck involved in beating Butler. I think Marquette they were the better team. They played a great game against a tough out in the NCAA tournament, and Marquette absolutely deserve to win that game.
Hard
fought, and really, there's really nothing you could take away from Marquette.
Well, can I say how excited I am to face Butler twice a year, for every year going here on out? That game was, I mean, both teams were classy. It was hard fought, and I can't wait to face. I mean, it's gonna be one of those rivalries where you want to beat them for sure, but you don't, you know, you don't hate them. It's the team you love to fight against, and I think it's going to be a heck of a conference with the two teams, Marquette and Butler, going at each other.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, and hopefully, you know, for Butler's sake, Brad Stevens is still there. Obviously, there's a rumored opening at UCLA, which maybe, you know, the Bruins come after Brad Stevens. Who knows what happens there? But I hope for the Bruins' sake and for the new league's sake, Brad Stevens and Buzz Williams can go head to head for many years to come, because I think it's going to be make for some great basketball. Let's talk about the Davidson game as well, because that game, you know, Marquette was outplayed for 39 minutes, to be honest.
Oh, absolutely.
And then the miracle minute, as I am calling it, happened. Most people will focus on the one bad play Davidson made that cost him the game, and that's fine to focus on that because it was a critical play and really the play Davidson fans will never forget. But I choose to focus on the entire last minute of the game when there was absolutely zero room for error for Marquette at that point. They had to execute perfectly on every possession from there on out, and they did. When, Jameel Wilson hit that three with a minute to play, that brought them within three.
Right.
And then, then Davidson came back, they got a layup, Vanderbilt comes down, gets a three, now they're within two. Two free throws for Davidson, then Jameel Wilson. Contested. Again, all these threes were contested. Hands in their face, and they're just throwing them up because they have to. It's total desperation. And another three goes in. And now they're down one. And then you're thinking, even though I had resigned myself to the loss minutes earlier, and now I'm thinking, holy crap, we've got a chance in this thing. And then Davidson makes the critical turnover. And then still, Marquette still had to make one more play. And they made it. And Vanderbilt, it was just like the St. John's play. They brought the big man out to get Cohen away from the basket. Blue drove right by him and got the layup in. That minute of basketball was about as perfect as Marquette could have possibly played it. For as poorly as Marquette played for 39 minutes, the last minute was absolutely perfect.
Well, and what was amazing about not only that they were contested threes going in, because they were going to be contested no matter what. Davidson was going to switch on everything. We weren't. But it was how quickly we got into reasonable shooting position. And in those kind of scenarios, and you see it all the time. I think we saw it in the Ohio State game. We're recording this on Sunday, so this morning, where they take 15, 20 seconds to get a shot off that doesn't even go in. I think in all three of those scenarios, I think less than 10 seconds went off the shot clock before the threes went up. And while they were contested, they were reasonable. So, like you said, execution was amazing. And I do have to say, as irrational confidence man with this tournament, once we got to within one with the possession, I knew Vander was going to score that goal. I knew that ball was going in that hoop, especially when you saw him with it at the circle, running the back screen play from the St. John's game. It's just classic 2013 Vanderbilt. It was destined to go in, if you want to call it that.
It's just unbelievable. And, we talked about, you mentioned earlier, how it wasn't Buzz's best game, and maybe he'll admit that or not. But, some of the, the substitutions, and they really didn't work out. And I remember watching the game, people saying, why is Jake Thomas on the floor? Well, Buzz even said in postgame he trusts Jake and doesn't really care what people think. I guess in the end, it all worked out. But Davidson, my heart honestly goes out to Davidson, because Davidson really did play a great game and all rights, probably deserved to win that game.
Well, but I will say this, and this is why, two things. One, I think the substitution patterns in the Davidson game were perplexing, especially putting Jake Thomas in there, who, I don't know if we were trying to catch Syracuse lightning in a bottle with him again or what. I thought the patterns were weird, whereas in the Butler game, while Buzz was substituting a ton, I think it ultimately made sense, and it proved out, fresh legs and kind of going line changes like 1980 U.S. hockey against the Soviets. But the other aspect to what was going on is Davidson actually, I think, made some coaching errors themselves. I rewatched the last 6 minutes of that Davidson game about four times because, that's just what I do, apparently. But if you look at it, there was one possession that just kind of symbolized it with like 5:30 to go. Davidson was up 7 or 9, and they actually took their foot off the gas. We were pressing. They broke the press pretty easy, and Brooks had the ball at the free throw line with Jameel Wilson and Vanderbilt at the baseline. All he had to do was take one dribble and go up, and he would have been either fouled or he would have gotten the bucket. Instead, he backed it out, and Davidson ran clock and ended up settling for a bad shot with two or three on the shot clock. I think they took the air out of the ball too soon and let Marquette back in. So while Buzz didn't have the best coaching day against Davidson, I think he caught some breaks from the opponent's coach making some mistakes as well.
I think another key to the game was really some of the rebounding from Marquette. I mean, they won the rebounding battle by 15. You know, as good as Cohen was for Davidson on the offensive end, and, you know, he only had one rebound in the game, which surprised me looking at the stats.
Yeah, that did too.
One rebound, only one block. He had 20 points on the offensive end, but Otule had 11 boards. Trent Lockett had 11 boards. Really one of his best efforts of the season. He had 5 points, but the 11 rebounds just jump out at me because Marquette really needed every single one of them. And, you know, Otule, a double-double, 11 points and 11 boards. And it just, you know, you talk about mistakes by Davidson, you know, Marquette's not going to apologize because, you know, Davidson needed to execute there at the end. And the thing I can't get over, and the thing I'm sure Davidson fans are kicking them about, is the kid who threw the ball away. He was like a 76% free throw shooter. If he just hangs on to the ball and gets fouled, Davidson probably escapes out of there. At worst, goes to overtime.
Right.
But, you know, he chucks it ahead to the kid who's shooting 94%, who isn't overly athletic, and he just couldn't run that ball down. And you just look at that play and just wonder why.
Even if he hangs on to it and gets fouled, or he throws it and completes the pass, what we're talking about is how slow Marquette was to foul on the play.
Right.
I don't know. You just got to chalk it up to, I guess this is March, because there is no way you could have drawn up the last minute of that game, you know, last 2 minutes of that game, and said, yeah, this is exactly how it's going to work out. I mean, that was, for lack of a better phrase, was just pure dumb luck.
It really was. You replay the last minute of that game, the last 2 minutes of that game over 100 times, and Marquette probably loses 99 of them.
I agree, but that's also why we love March. And in this case,
I know it's fantastic, and not apologizing to anybody. That's the way it goes.
Well, and if you think of all the bad breaks that Marquette's gotten in March in past years, you know, the one that immediately comes to mind is Lazar against Missouri stepping over the end line. You know, Marquette's had some bad breaks go against them. It looks like this season we're maybe going to get the breaks going our way.
I'll certainly take it. And, you know, I said before the tournament started, you know, if this team gets to the Sweet 16, that's good enough for me. You know, I think that's about as far as I could realistically expect this team to go. Obviously, I want to see them keep winning. Who wouldn't want to see Marquette win the national championship? But now I feel like Marquette is just playing with house money, because I'm curious to see if, you know, their perspective changes, you know, going forward, because they'll likely be underdogs in all the games going forward. And, you know, I still just kind of have that feeling of playing loose, knowing that really not many people outside of their own locker room expect them to win another game.
Well, and I think Buzz has shown over the years that there's nothing he loves more than being the underdog or being thought of as less than the basketball elite. I think he thrives on that. And I think what we'll see is this team come out. Whether they win or lose, I have every confidence in the world that this team will be extremely competitive. I think they're going to have frustrating moments, regardless of who they play on Thursday. They're going to have frustrating moments where the offense just kind of goes crippled. I just think that's who this team is. And then all of a sudden they'll wake up and just kind of go crazy. But I think it's also interesting that, you know, how the bench changes things. Because one of the things that's been driving me nuts in these last two games is how little play Steve Taylor's been getting. But I'm going to ride and die with Buzz. He's going to make the decisions, and I think he's making the vast majority of good ones. So it'll just be an interesting couple of games here, hopefully a couple of games, and I'm just looking forward to enjoying it.
Yeah, I mean, Buzz can do no wrong at this point. I mean, every button he pushed in the Butler game worked, and even if you disagree with some of the buttons he pushed in the Davidson game, the final score had Marquette up one, and that's all that matters. So, you know, Marquette, will just see if they keep winning. You know, the past 2 years in the Sweet 16, that third game has not gone well for Marquette at all. Of course, 2 years ago, they really just got blown out by North Carolina in the Sweet 16. That was just a really good North Carolina team. I mean, that team was just way better, and, you know, you just you just accept that one. And then last year, the Florida game, Marquette didn't really get blown out. They lost by 10, but it kind of felt like they got blown out because they just missed so many shots in that game. I'll be curious to see how they come out, because a lot of the players on this year's team have Sweet 16 experience, particularly Junior Cadugan. This will be his third Sweet 16. Jamil Wilson, of course, had a prominent role on the team last year. This will be Devontae Gardner's third Sweet 16. Vander's third Sweet 16. So we'll see, you know, if the team's any more, you know, I'm confident they will not have that feeling of we're happy to be here.
Right. Well, you know, and I also think that of the two possible teams, and as of recording this, we don't know whether it's going to be Illinois or Miami. Illinois or Miami, neither one of them will have the experience that Marquette does. So you have to think that counts for something.
Yeah, I think I'd be talking out of both sides of my mouth because I said before the Davidson game, I think experience is overrated.
But Davidson's experience didn't hold them in good stead, so maybe you're right. I don't know.
You know, well, take whatever advantage Marquette can get. I guess I am kind of saying, though, that I do think the experience of Marquette and no longer having the feeling of we're just happy to be here should play into their favor. Now, if they run into a buzzsaw, a really great team, and lose, well, you know, that's just the way it goes. This team has accomplished a lot more than I and many Marquette fans and really anyone around college basketball thought they would this year. Big East co-champions, and now their third straight Sweet 16, breaking really new ground for the program, and we'll just see how far Buzz and this team can keep it going, but I am absolutely loving what I'm seeing, and I think if Marquette can put together 40 minutes like they did that last 20 minutes against Butler, I think Marquette can really beat anyone in the tournament, because that was just a very well-played 20 minutes, especially on the defensive end. And if, you know, you get 40 minutes like that from Vander, then, yeah, Marquette is a special team, I think.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think this team can beat anyone. It's just going to be a question of do the matchups favor them, and does Buzz pull the right triggers? I think it likely he will, and I think the team will respond, and I think the teams are going to be competitive. I don't think we're going to see, you know, blowouts or anything like that, but it's going to be matchup dependent. I think Illinois, we have a really good shot. Miami, I guess I would say I was concerned against Miami, but this team can show up and beat anyone, and who knows, maybe we have a date with destiny to cleanse the Crean palate, so to speak. Who knows?
Yeah, well, Marquette's certainly no strangers to Washington, D.C. I mean, they do have a pretty good alumni base there. And, you know, if all the Georgetown fans in Washington, D.C. want to come out to A, boo Syracuse, and B, pull for Marquette, well, that would be just dynamite for the Catholic Seven brethren to unite there in D.C. So hopefully there's plenty of Marquette fans in D.C. and they get a nice crowd against whoever they end up playing. But I'm certainly looking forward to it, and we are going to come back later this week and we'll break down Marquette's opponent and kind of look ahead to the next matchup. But Phil, final thoughts as we wrap up this edition of Scrambled Eggs on what this team has accomplished to be in its third consecutive Sweet 16.
I think it's just an amazing coaching job. The players have really stepped up and taken on that that role of underdogs, and nobody believes in us, beautifully. And I think, just quite frankly, the Marquette fan base needs to sit back and enjoy the next, you know, the next week, because I think we're seeing something special this week. It just has that feel of Team of Destiny. So I'm just excited to be able to watch it.
I am looking forward to seeing what happens. We'll come back later in the week and talk about Marquette's Sweet 16 opponent, and hopefully maybe we'll talk about an Elite 8 opponent after that. That would be the first time we've talked about that since 2003. But that's it for this edition of Scrambled Eggs. Again, you can catch us on Twitter, everybody, to stay in touch. I am Joe McCann 3 on Twitter. Phil, he would be found at Moof23. That's 3 O's in Moof. Thanks for listening, everybody. Hope your rest of your weekend is seashells and balloons. Have a good one.